So one of the things I love about the Bible, and particularly one of its attributes, is that it doesn't clean up human nature. Now, you've heard me say this before, and I'll probably end up saying it a number of times, even into the future. And one of the real values of the Old Testament, maybe more so than the New Testament, is that you see human depravity in its fullness in the Old Testament. The New Testament is, you know, we have a theology, and from theology you see human depravity, or you see human nature. The Old Testament, you can form theology, but you have to see it through the dregs of human nature. And one of the major Christian tenets, theological tenets, is we believe in human depravity and the need for divine grace. And divine grace is not just for all the horrible people, it's for every single person. So if you are breathing and a human, then we're all in need of divine grace. Even the saints of old. So in our passage, we have what many might say the patriarch and matriarch of at least the major narrative of the book of Genesis. We've got what we know eventually will become Abraham and Sarah, Abram and Sarah now in the passage. And in our text, they've been in Canaan, modern-day Israel, for a decade now. And one of the ways that God sought to meet this deep yearning inside of Abraham and Sarah's life, this yearning that we've been looking at in every sermon throughout our sermon series in the book of Genesis, is that people have a soul in a deep yearning for connection to God and connection to other people. And at the same time, there's a temptation to feel that, to meet that yearning, to meet that void, to fill it in self-centered or in self-interest ways. And one of the ways that God wanted to meet that connectional need for Abraham was through the giving of a son, a child. Now, in the passage, that has not happened yet. And so they've been in the land for 10 years waiting on this. It hasn't happened. And so they begin to take matters into their own hands. They wanted to, they sought an alternative, and their version would be that there would be a child through a surrogate. Now, perhaps this is premature on their end, but that was the solution that they sought. And so Abraham and Hagar conceived, and not long into her pregnancy, both Sarah and Hagar began to despise each other, really based on jealousy, one jealous of the other, and vice versa. And eventually, Sarah complained to Abram, so much so, and he wasn't much help, he just washed his hands to the situation, and said, "You handle it." And so Sarah mistreated Hagar, and Hagar fled. Now, what's interesting about Genesis 16 is it has a parallel chapter or a sister chapter, which is Genesis chapter 21. And in both of these passages, it involves Sarai and Hagar. And 16, it's just those two. And 21, it's those two and their children. Both times Hagar leaves, she fled, and both times God intervened on her behalf, which is interesting in the book of Genesis. Both times, in 16, she is sent back to Sarah, and 21, God provided provisions for both Hagar and Ishmael. But the problem in the relationship is jealousy. Jealousy comes from a prideful longing for something that belongs to another. And that can, you can speak about it in tangible means. It could be intangible. And jealousy's anchored with greed. Now, jealousy's sister, envy, is a resentment towards the success or possessions of another. And whereas jealousy is linked to greed, envy is linked to anger. But in the Bible, jealousy and envy, they're interchangeable, because both of them deal with what we call an I-heart connection. What's on the inside of a person, say their inward sense of being, that will be manifested outwardly. And if the inward being is a place of unrest, then often jealousy and envy can be a struggle, and it manifests itself outwardly. And the punishment for jealousy is that there's no gratification. It's an insatiable appetite. And where one struggles with a love even of themselves, definitely a love of other people. Because if a person is in an unfilled state, again, we're talking about this line that shows up all in the Genesis stories, this idea of an innate soul yearning to be connected to God, to be connected to other people. And when that yearning is not met, or if it's met in self-centered or self-interest ways, jealousy or her sister, envy, looms large. Because it seeks to fill that need in a self-centered or in a self-interest way. It feeds on our insecurities, our inadequacies, even our fears. Here's what's interesting to me, and I'm going to test this with you. Have you ever noticed how difficult it is for someone to confess that they're jealous? I mean, we can confess when we're angry. We can confess when we're prideful. But seldom does someone say, I'm jealous. And in our families and in our relationships, jealousy is a major cause of unhappiness and strife. A person who struggles with jealousy, seldom are they happy or fulfilled, which affects then also their happiness and fulfillment with another person. People who struggle with jealousy, they live sometimes in self-contempt. They struggle with themselves, who they are, because they see themselves as not the person that they're jealous of or the person that they envy. And so again, it's manifested in things of anger or in greed. I mean, think about the classical stories in literature. Shakespeare's Othello, The Merchant of Venice, and not even with Shakespeare's, Disney, Snow White. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? What fuels her? Jealousy. There are other stories. The Great Gatsby, Amadeus. There are hundreds of them whose plots are driven by jealousy. We don't admit it for ourselves. We can recognize it in another person, but seldom do we recognize it in our own life. And again, it has this outward manifestations. Gossip, backbiting, lashing out, manipulation. In families, and I see this in marriages all the time, because of jealousy, they adopt an unhealthy competition with each other. Which you would think wouldn't exist, but it does. And it makes it difficult to receive love. It makes it get difficult to give love. You know, there's a passage in the New Testament. It's in Matthew chapter 20, and frankly, I really wish it wasn't in the gospel at all. I really do not like this story. And it's a passage of a person that owns a company, and he contracts with a group of people that makes up his first shift. They sign the contract, they go to work, 8 a.m., and everything seems to be okay. At noon, he forms a second shift, and they sign a contract, and they begin to work from noon. And then right at 4 o'clock, he hires a third shift. They sign the contract, and they work, and then the bell rings at 5 for the work to be over, and they're all ready to be paid. And so he pays them all. He pays them all the same wage. If you're unfamiliar with this story, there's probably something in your mind right now that's saying, wait a minute, that's not fair. And the truth is, that's exactly how they answered in the parable. The first shift and the second shift, they're all up in arms saying, this is not fair. We've worked longer. You know what the answer is from the owner? Why are you so jealous that I'm that generous? We struggle with jealousy, often in our relationships. And it hinders us from finding meaning in who we are, that connection to God, meaningful relationships, that connection with other people. St. Augustine wrote a number of things. His chief work is something that's called Confessions. And so much of this is born out of his own life. And his most favorite line in this book says, O God, you have made us for yourselves, and our hearts are restless until it finds rest in you. The way I like to say it, an unrestful soul will look for unrest everywhere. But a heart that's at rest or at peace, it looks for peace and it looks for rest everywhere. This is not lost on the wisdom writers. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 30, a tranquil heart, some versions say a peaceful heart or a peaceful mind. It gives life to the flesh, gives life to the body. But jealousy, do you know that verse? Jealousy rots the bones. Other versions of the Bible say jealousy is like an inward cancer that eats a person from the inside out. So how do we address this? How do we deal with jealousy? And how do we counter it? I think we counter it with the experience of God's grace. So God's grace is the outward manifestation of God's love. And so if we take this Proverbs connection, a mind or a heart that's at peace, then the more they experience the grace of God, the more they become at peace. And we perceive this love, this grace of God. You perceive God's love the same way that you perceive love from somebody else. It's in word and deed, word and action. How do you perceive love from the person next to you? It's little by little. At first, it's with words. I love you. You hear that. You test it. And then there's actions that accompany. There's actions that balance. And then when you add in time, over and over and over again, that perception becomes your reality. So when that person says, I love you, it's not the first time they've said it. It's not the first action that they've committed. It's a number of words, a number of actions, until finally it is your life. It's your skin. And so it becomes the normal. You don't question it. You don't worry about it. You just know that it's there. And the same thing is with God. Action. The way Paul described it, when we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Do you know that verse? That proves God's love for us. His action in the person Christ. And then over and over and over, when you read, you cannot read the scriptures and not read over and over his love for you. Directly, through his spirit. Indirectly, through the life of another person. And then you add time to this. And so it's little by little by little by little, this perceiving, 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 until finally, this is how you see yourself. And so where jealousy feeds on an unfulfilled inside of a person, this grace of God is filling that yearning. And so little by little, it counters the temptation. And so then that change from the inside out becomes the new normal for you. You know, I mentioned this to the 9 o'clock service, and it's not a pretty analogy, but it works. Years ago, I'm really kind of a klutz around our house. They don't let me touch much of anything, and I'm famous for burning my hands. I can cut myself anytime when I'm trying to cook, and if you take me fishing, that is not a good thing because I'm probably going to hook you, or I'm really prone to take the knife and stab myself in the leg, which I did one time. And it was such a wound that he couldn't really just sew it up right then. I don't know if it got infected. And so I had to go home with all this medicine. And again, this is not a pretty analogy. But they gave me these long Q-tips, and they wanted me to clean it out little by little. Just stay with me, all right? We're going to be out of here in 5 minutes, I promise. So, but little by little, it's getting the infection out. And then once the infection was at a certain place, they were able to sew me up. And jealousy is like that infection to our relationships. And so when we experience the grace of God little by little, in word and in deed, over time, it changes our being. And so our insides change. And so then that temptation, that insatiable appetite, where you want to feed something inside of you and you try to feed it with all these external things and they don't work, all of a sudden you find fulfillment in Him. Because it changes the inside, which then also determines what we do on the outside. Jealousy is a destroyer of relationships. But it doesn't have to be. And you can find its counter with the grace of God. And so what we want to do today is be open to the ways that God's grace works and lives inside of each of us. So may it be for you, my friends, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.